Chapter 55. But could she, by retributive words, in order to please herself, the individual, fend against the generation, as he would not? He is dying, perhaps, blubbered Sue Damson, putting her apron to her eyes. In their gestures and faces there were anxieties, affection, agony of heart, all for a man who had wronged them had never really behaved towards either of them anyhow but selfishly. Neither one but would have well-nigh sacrificed half her life to him, even now. The tears which his possibly critical situation could not bring to her eyes surged over at the contemplation of these fellow women. She turned to the balustrade, bent herself upon it, and wept. Thereupon Felice began to cry also, without using her handkerchief, and letting the tears run down silently. While these three poor women stood together thus, pitying another though most to be pitied themselves, the pacing of a horse or horses became audible in the court, and in a moment Melberry's voice was heard calling to his stableman. Grace at once started up, ran down the stairs, and out into the quadrangle as her father crossed it towards the door. "Athier, what is the matter with him?" she cried. "Who, Edgar?" said Melberry, abruptly. "Adder? Nothing. What, my dear, and have you got home safe? Why, you are better already. But you ought not to be out in the air like this." "But he has been thrown off his horse."
"I know, I know. I saw it. He got up again, and walked off as well as ever. A fall on the leaves didn't hurt a spry fellow like him. He did not come this way," he added, significantly. "Suppose he went to look for his horse. I tried to find him, but could not. But after seeing him go away under the trees I found the horse, and have led it home for safety. So he must walk. Now, don't you stay out here in this night air." She returned to the house with her father. When he had again ascended to the landing, and to her own rooms beyond, it was a great relief to her to find that both Petticoat the first, and Petticoat the second of her bename had silently disappeared. They had, in all probability, heard the words of her father, and departed with their anxieties relieved. Presently her parents came up to Grace, and busied themselves to see that she was comfortable. Perceiving soon that she would prefer to be left alone, they went away. Grace waited on. The clock raised its voice now and then, but her husband did not return. At her father's usual hour for retiring, he again came in to see her. "Oh, not stay up," she said, as soon as he entered. "I'm not at all tired. I will sit up for him." "I think it will be useless, Grace," said Melberry, slowly.
"Why?"
"I have had a bitter quarrel with him, and on that account I hardly think he will return tonight."
"A quarrel? Was that after the fall seen by the boy?"
Melberry nodded an affirmative, without taking his eyes off the candle.
"Yes, it was as we were coming home together," he said. Something had been swelling up in Grace while her father was speaking.
"How could you want to quarrel with him?" she cried, suddenly. "Why could you not let him come home quietly, if he were inclined to? He is my husband, and now you have married me to him, surely you need not provoke him unnecessarily. First you induce me to accept him, and then you do things that divide us more than we should naturally be divided."
"How can you speak so unjustly to me, Grace?" said Melberry, with indignant sorrow.
"Divide you from your husband, indeed. You little think." He was inclined to say more, to tell her the whole story of the encounter, and that the provocation he had received had lain entirely in hearing her despised. But it would have greatly distressed her, and he forbore.
"Who had better lie down? You are tired," he said, soothingly.
"Good night." The household went to bed, and a silence fell upon the dwelling, broken only by the occasional skirr of a halter in Melberry's stables. Despite her father's advice, Grace still waited up. But nobody came. It was a critical time in Grace's emotional life that night. She thought of her husband a good deal, and for the nonce forgot Winterbourne. "How these unhappy women must have admired Edgar," she said to herself. "How attractive he must be to everybody,
and, indeed, he is attractive. The possibility is that, piqued by rivalry, these ideas might have been transformed into their corresponding emotions by a show of the least reciprocity in Fitzpiers. There was, in truth, a lovebird yearning to fly from her heart, and it wanted a lodging badly. But no husband came. The fact was that Melberry had been much mistaken about the condition of Fitzpiers. People do not fall headlong on stumps of underwood with impunity. Had the old man been able to watch Fitzpiers narrowly enough, he would have observed that on rising and walking into the thicket he dropped blood as he went, that he had not proceeded 50 yards, before he showed signs of being dizzy, and, raising his hands to his head, reeled and fell down. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.